Welcome to the Alaska Works podcast. My name is Bronson Fry. I am joined here by Forrest Dunbar and Xavier Schley. We are going to be chatting this afternoon about the relevance of local politics to the construction industry here in our town of Anchorage. Forrest, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, man.
So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background, where you're from and what do you do?
Sure, happy to. First of all, I love the broadcaster Bronson voice. It's very staid and relaxed. It's very soothing.
Not my normal nasally drone.
My name's Forrest, obviously. I represent East Anchorage on the Anchorage Assembly. I grew up in Cordova on Prince William Sound, and before that in Eagle, a little town on the Yukon. And I went to law school on the East Coast and came back to Alaska during law school got involved in local politics and now work kind of in corporate law part-time and then serve on the Anchorage Assembly. And just happy to be here.
Well, right on. Thank you very much for joining us. And Xavier, just a little bit about yourself so people know who all is in the room with us.
This is the sound of my voice. I'm Xavier Schley. I'm the co-host of the Alaska Works podcast.
And our producer extraordinaire.
And today, producer, we'll see how it goes.
Well, thank you also for joining us and hosting us today. So one of the things that I was hoping that we could talk about that I think might be interesting to folks out there is the importance of local politics in general. So we sometimes get all the air sucked out of the room by the national level, with things
sure.
going on at maybe the state level. And so I was going to see if you could maybe share with us what you think is the meat and potatoes relevance of local politics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely true that right now, as you said, the air kind of gets sucked out of the room with national politics. But local politics, it really hits people close to where they live. And so people get really passionate about it, you'll see things like speed bumps, crosswalks and these really small projects. But ultimately, to that person who lives on that street, it's the most important thing in their world right now. And they'll come to you if you serve on the assembly, and they'll come with these very personal problems. You know, someone will say like, "Hey, these guys dumped a fridge behind my house in the park." You know,
right.
And for a senator or for the governor, it's like, well, I can't deal with that fridge. But for me, that becomes like my priority. Okay, I'm going to get this fridge out of this person's backyard, because they didn't do anything wrong,
Right.
So I call up SWS and hopefully we can get that fridge removed,
Right.
And so it's very personal. I'll say for the construction industry, though, we're at a really challenging point right now with the state budget. And a lot of the construction projects going on in Anchorage now are funded by municipal bonds. Or more generally by the municipal budget, or by the enterprises that are owned by the and utilities that are owned by the municipality. Merrill Field, the Port, MLMP, AWU. Those people all have a variety of projects, and the municipality itself has projects, and then the school district has projects as well, and that's all local government. And I think at this time when we have, and I think we'll talk more about this later, we have a very small state capital budget, unfortunately. And that means that, a lot of the work that's being done around town ultimately flows through the municipality.
And if somebody had strong feelings about things that were happening in their city and in their town, whether it was specifically related to construction or not, what would be the most tangible, best hands-on way that you would recommend someone get involved if they did have those strong feelings?
Well, Anchorage is a pretty unique town, and I'm not sure if it's the only city in the state that's like this, but we have these things called community councils, and there's 36 or so community councils. And anywhere you go in Anchorage, you live in a community council. Even if you live in like Bird or Indian, there's one for them too. And they have real influence. They sort of have pride of place in the Anchorage charter. And so assembly members, I have 5 community councils in my district. I think Dick Traney has like 9,
Wow.
And we all go to, or at least I always go to all of mine. And I know Dick does as well. And we listen to the concerns of the neighborhood. Now, that's sort of good and bad because the people that show up at the community council aren't really a broad cross-section of who lives in any given community or district.
Sure.
It tends to be people who have a little more free time or people that are really spun up about one issue, And usually it's a relatively small group of people. We're talking like 15, 20 people.
Sure.
And my district is 55,000.
Okay.
And five community councils, 20 people per community councils, you're talking 100 people, maybe 200 people, you know, out of 55,000. And those are definitely the people who are the first people you sort of talk to. And so if people want to get involved, I really recommend they go to their community council. You can find it online. If you just Google, you know, Anchorage Community Councils, you can find where your community council is. They meet usually once a month. They're all on break for July typically. Excuse me. But they should be back in August or September. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is just to email or call. I prefer email. You know, sure. I prefer email. Other people prefer calls, but I prefer email because I think I got a little record of it. You know, I can forward things to people in the administration. Online, we've got we've all got our official email addresses posted, and we actually check them every day, or at least I do. And they. You know, the assembly doesn't really have staff, and so there's not really any barrier between you and your assembly person, and they really do. Yeah, it's good and bad, right?
Sure.
We really do read those and listen to them, and I've actually seen policies change based on just a group of neighbors start emailing emailing the municipality, or rather the assembly, and saying, hey, you know, we want this. Actually, one good example of that is Stuckingen Heights, you know, Basher Community Council. They were having problems with their road, and they kept reaching out to me and to Pete Peterson, their other assembly person. And ultimately, me and Pete went and talked to the mayor, and we were able to find some funding to do some repairs on the upper part of their road. So the lower part of their road, there's a big project happening right now that's using federal funds to kind of reconstruct that lower part of the road. Mm-hmm. But if you go further up past into like Far North Bicentennial Park, and there's a lot of park users up that way, the road was really starting to deteriorate. And so we went and found a little bit of money to do some patchwork, basically. You know, ultimately, to reconstruct that road, we're probably going to need a state capital grant. Spoiler alert, there's not a lot of that going on right now.
Sure.
Maybe sometime in the future. That's an example of you can have a real impact on your assembly and your municipal government just by sending an email or giving a call or showing up at a community council.
Isn't that kind of the selling point for getting involved in local politics, is the access is so much easier?
Yeah.
And you can make a bigger difference than you can with, say, national or state politics.
Yeah, I mean, the Jeffersonian ideal, right, was all these little self-governing units around our country. Mm-hmm. And then our country grew so large that it became very difficult because, you know, every congressperson represents 750,000 people. You know, the senators represent even more in the large states. And so there's going to be layers between you and them, and it's going to be hard to get a hold of them. Mm-hmm. But at the local level, we still have that kind of democracy, you know, with a... I don't know if it's capital D or little d, but we still have those norms, you know. And Anchorage is, I mean, I'll just say, you know, plug for the Anchorage Assembly. I've worked on the Hill in D.C., and I've worked in Juneau, and I do think that our assembly is sort of right now the most sort of collegial and kind of productive body I've been a part of, you know, and things happen relatively quickly. It doesn't mean they can achieve everything. We've obviously got some pretty severe budget constraints of our own. But people are generally respectful of each other, respectful of ideas, and things are, you know, Mark Begich once told me there's nothing partisan about a pothole, and that's mostly what we do, you know.
Sure.
We don't get caught up in the national, you know, partisan nonsense, and that's been really productive.
Outstanding. And just so that I'm clear and those listening, community councils are not strictly along district lines. So you don't need to necessarily know the letter or number of your district. You can just put in your location and find your community council, which is probably going to be a much smaller group, sounds like.
Yeah. They don't track with like state legislative districts or state
or assembly districts.
Yeah, or assembly districts. Sure. So like I said, I have five, you know.
Okay.
Some of them are relatively large and very active, and some of them are very small. Some of them are basically non-functioning. So you might be unlucky enough to live in one of the ones that isn't particularly well-functioning, and then I just recommend that you restart your community council and get
there
that
you
going,
go.
You know, get some local leadership.
Yeah, all right, I like it. Now, the construction industry is pretty unique all by itself in a lot of ways, and I was curious if you would like to talk about how the construction industry specifically can be affected by these local level politics.
Sure.
A lot of projects we hear about, the ones that make the news mostly are the big ones that might have federal dollars in, but certainly most of the time state dollars at least, and they get a lot of attention. But what role does the municipality play in construction jobs here in Anchorage?
Well, you know, even those big federal projects usually have some kind of local component to them. The state ones certainly do. There's the AMATS project, the process rather, that where federal funds flow into the city. But yeah, as I was driving down here, I was looking at that big, you know, the redoing part of the Seward Highway, and I was thinking about, you know, I don't know what role the municipality played in that directly. But you know, you will see, first of all, there's the politics of things, like just straight politics, you know, where people will be opposed to projects and get them killed, or they'll be supportive of projects and get them going forward. And then you have the interplay between the different funding sources. You know, often it's a combination, you'll have a combination of state and federal, maybe a little municipal money too, it, you know, for different projects. I think that project at the bottom of Campbell Airstrip Road is an example of that, where you have different pots of money. Mm-hmm. But right now, you know, the truth is there just isn't a lot of state money coming into the city. You know, there was something like $120 million. I saw this list of all the things we wanted to ask the state for last year, you know, and it was something like $120 million in deferred maintenance and different kinds of projects, you know, around the city. You know, things like rebuilding where I live, Scenic Foothills, you know, that neighborhood, Scenic Valley rather, where they need tons of drainage projects and to redo those roads. And then you've got, you've got tons of maintenance everywhere, you know. But ultimately, we realized that the state isn't really coming forth with that right now. And so you saw a larger bond this year than you otherwise would, I think, road bond or a couple of road bonds, because we weren't getting this funding coming in from the state. So, I mean, that is kind of one of the most direct ways is the municipal bonds, you know. And I hope that people listening to this podcast support the municipal bonds when they see them, because, look, I mean, we are in a financial crisis right now, but we can't just stop investing in the city and investing in ourselves, you know. Ultimately, we are right now, the city has a, you know, gold standard bond rating, which means we can borrow at a really low rate. Right. And if we wait, if we defer this maintenance even more, then it's going to cost us more down the road, you know, where things start to catastrophically fail. That's the case certainly with the school bonds, you know. With you know, we did part of West this time, you know, and we had a larger school bond this time because they rejected the school bond last year, which I thought was unfortunate. But you know, and we're not talking about fancy projects here. We're talking about, with the school bond, we were talking about like HVAC and roofs. Yeah, exactly. Like that was what they were asking for. You know, we weren't asking for new football fields, you know, although sometimes you need a new football field too, right? Especially when the dome collapses, you know, and people are wondering where we're going to play, you know, and what we're going to do about that. But yeah, I mean, ultimately there's only so much money and we're trying to prioritize, you know. The biggest project going forward in my part of town right now is Dubin Avenue on the west side of, I'm sorry, the east side of Muldoon. That was funded with a, you know, municipal bond. And that, you know, if you've been on Dubin, if you've been on that part of Dubin where it goes up the hill, like that area is desperately in need of safety upgrades.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of project we're putting on the municipal bonds. And like I said, again, we are getting a really good interest rate right now. So it makes sense for us to continue to have these bonds, to invest in the city, to keep this industry going, you know. And I think ultimately, so look, I mean, you and I were talking about this earlier today about apprenticeships, about trying to keep the skilled labor in Alaska, and to keep these construction companies working too, you know. I mean, we can't just let our construction industry collapse and expect that in a few years down the road we can like sort of rebuild it, you know what I mean?
Right.
We have to keep these things going. And I think that, you know, I understand why that the state level, they cut the capital budget. You know, we have a problem there. But at some point, we have to have capital budgets again.
Right.
You know, we can't just not have a capital budget. And if that takes a general obligation bond statewide, then we have to do that, you know. And I think we need to start talking more seriously about doing that, you know. And we can talk more about the need for a broad-based tax and that kind of thing, too. You know, ultimately, we have to diversify our revenue streams so we can have both an operating budget and a functional capital budget. And Anchorage right now is in better financial health than the state as a whole,
right,
at least in terms of our revenue. You know, obviously the state has a tons of savings, but they don't have much revenue. We still have because we have a broad-based tax and the property tax, we are able to continue to have these projects, and I think they are crucial to keep the construction industry healthy in the city.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you, fine sir. And seeing all our qualified, skilled hands leave the state to go to places that have more healthy economies is going to come back and bite us eventually when the things do turn around here. And we're lucky enough to have all the construction projects, but then not have any skilled hands here to do the work. So an investment now in ourselves and in the training of the workforce of the future, I think, would be a wise choice.
Well, yeah, and let me just say again, we're not talking about things that are extravagant here. And I think there's been this focus on, you know, there was a time when Alaska was flush and we built a variety of, you know, roads, bridges, that kind of thing. And that's all well and good. But right now, we don't need a bunch of new mega projects. What we need more than anything else is maintenance. Mm-hmm. You know, things are starting to deteriorate. We had this boom time in the 70s and 80s, and a lot of that stuff needs to be maintained. And that's not sexy for a politician. You know, like you don't get to do a ribbon cutting, you know, on like a drainage
on
project.
A repaint of a school.
Right. Yeah. But that's actually what we need to do. Absolutely. You know, that's actually. And that works good too, you know.
Well, that's really interesting stuff. One of the things that I thought was fascinating we were chatting about a while back was how the local level political process can play out for the type of projects that many of us see or probably experience or drive through in this town. And you were explaining to me how on Spinard they are redoing some of the road there, and there was a pretty extensive process that involved a lot of community input at the municipal level, and I thought it was really interesting. I was going to see if you wanted to chat about that or talk about it a little bit, and also maybe a lot of folks don't even realize that they will be afforded these opportunities to weigh in on some of these projects. And so I just thought you might want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe, hopefully at some point you can get John Weddleton on this podcast too. You know, he is one of my colleagues on the assembly, and he was, because he has a business in Spinard, before he was on the assembly, he was instrumental in, you know, sort of the shape of what that project looked like. Mm-hmm. And a lot of business owners had input there, and community members and community council. You know, it took years, many years, to get that project going forward. And you know, it's a combination of traffic and safety upgrades. It should make Spinard more walkable, should sort of open it up for commerce and that kind of thing. And, you know, that also went on the bond and ultimately was funded. People in Anchorage voted on that and said, we're going to go forward. I think the interesting thing that you and I were talking about is, and Xavier, you mentioned this as well, is it got to the end. And there were some people who were sort of opposed to it, you know.
Sure.
And their opposition wasn't crazy. You know, they were business owners who felt they were going to lose valuable frontage, you know, because we needed to take some right away to build this thing.
And or parking, a lot of it was parking.
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with parking, on-street parking, that kind of thing. And, you know, there's this process where the municipality goes and makes sort of fair market value after assessing offers to a variety of businesses. And most of the businesses, there were 40-odd businesses or something along those lines, the vast majority of them agreed to the terms, ultimately, after a lot of negotiation. But there were some holdouts, and they were passionate, and they weren't crazy, and they had legitimate beef with how things played out. You know, ultimately we had to use the power of eminent domain, which is one of those things that I don't think anybody wants to do, but ultimately we felt that this project should go forward. And eminent domain, I think people think that, you know, when you use eminent domain, it just means the government comes and takes your land, basically, and that's it, and you get no say in it. But what actually happens is there is a sort of back and forth process where things are mediated. I think ultimately you can go to Superior Court or some court, and there's a decision on, you know, was this actually fair? Did they get the money that they deserved, you know? But it's so that, you know, you don't have one holdout that can stop one of these big projects, you know.
Sure.
And ultimately we did it. And I was trying to think earlier about what the vote count was. I think it was 9-2 or 10-1. It might have even been unanimous. But it was overwhelming, you know, that ultimately we decided to go forward with it. And so if you go to Spinard now and you go look, there's a major construction project happening down there, you know. And that is, I think, going to be good for Spinard, good for Anchorage, and good for the construction industry.
It's interesting that you said the vote count was so overwhelming, being that the process of getting to that vote,
yeah,
I mean, I think I started getting involved with it, and that's my neighborhood, like in 2008.
Yeah.
You know, and wow. It had been going way before I started, you
sure.
know. So the sort of all the public hearings and the community council involvement was contentious and took a long, long time for it actually to even get to the point where it could be
right.
an overwhelming vote.
Yeah, and that's that's good and bad, right? On the one hand, it means that municipal projects and government projects in general, they often take a really long time, you know, to get where they're going, you know, because there is this public process often, and people get to have their say. But on the other hand, I think the ultimate project ended up looking different than what was originally proposed because they listened to the neighborhood, and that's also how you get to yes, and you get to an overwhelming consensus on the assembly, right? Because ultimately, we probably have a better project because the community was involved.
Nice.
Well, and it also kind of illustrates what the point of, or the benefit of being involved in local politics. Like, a project gets, you get excited about it, it's in your neighborhood or whatever, and so now you start to go to the community council meetings or you start to talk to your representative.
Yeah.
And what I found is once you're in that loop, you're now so much better informed about not sure. only that project, but all the things that are going on in your local politics or that affect you
right.
because of your local politics.
Right.
But if you're not involved, all you are is you hear what people say and you have an idea of what's going on and
right.
you're not really aware. So it's mostly just angry people that you hear from if you're not actually involved talking to your politicians.
Well, you know, there's a lot of angry people at all these things, you know, and that just kind of comes with the territory. And sometimes they're angry for legitimate reasons, you know. And sometimes they're just angry.
Sure. Well, that's the nice part about being involved at the local level, because there isn't that barrier to talk to the elected representative, and you can kind of have that direct communication, which is nice. And I think most folks should take advantage of that.
Sure. Yeah. So right now, another example of this kind of going forward is we have a major project at Tudor and Elmore mm-hmm. that we're hoping will go forward. And basically what happened was for a long time, we wanted to tear down the it's either HHS or HSS building with the health and social services or health and human services. One's at the state, one's at the muni. But the point is, our version of that mm-hmm. is in this really old building downtown. Mm-hmm. And we've been trying to get a new building for that for a long time. And we have we've had an RFP on the street. And ultimately, these two developers that had separate projects came together and put forward this proposal where we will give them the land there in fee simple if they tear down our building and build us a new building down at the corner of Tudor and Elmore. And then we have several tracts of land that we will also give to this developer. And they plan to build a grocery store there
right.
and about 200 units of apartments and then maybe a hotel. You know, it's a major project. We're
right.
talking $180 million.
Well,
they have to move the bus barn right. too because ASD is there. But this is a major project. And I think it's a credit to this administration that the Berkowitz administration, I mean, they were really creative about this and using our land resources. So, you know, the municipality has the ability to bond. We have our own budget, but we also have land that we hold.
Right.
And we can use that to have these large construction projects. And so, again, it's win-win, right? I mean, hopefully we'll have good work for good people there, and I think Eklutna Inc. is going to be one of the main contractors there. And then we'll have more housing, and we'll have a grocery store, and we'll have a new HHS building. And we'll also have downtown, they're planning to build some senior housing, permanent senior housing, which should be great as well. So, you know, that's another way that the municipality can bring forward these large projects, even in times when budgets are tight and things are challenging.
That's really cool, and a really good example of the way that the municipal level of a government can have a big impact
sure.
on the construction industry.
Oh, and what I wanted to say, going off of what Xavier said, is that we are just now entering that public process. So we had a town hall at the Permit Center, and there were, you know, more than probably 100 people, certainly felt like a lot of people in this room, you know, and with a lot of questions about what's this going to do with, you know, traffic, with the integrity of the neighborhood, with, you know, sound and pollution and everything else, and what about downtown? And you get these questions, you know. And these are just normal folks who show up and are interested in what's happening in their neighborhood, you know. And that kind of project, a project of that size, it reverberates out beyond just that neighborhood, you know. That's the kind of project that will impact a good segment of Anchorage. And if you drive along Tudor or Elmore, or if you have, let's say you have your mother or father that's looking for affordable senior housing, this impacts you too, you know what I mean? So, or if you were you're someone that uses the services of that government agency, well, you're not going to be going downtown anymore. You're going to be going down to Tudor and Elmore. And so we've got to make sure the bus routes can accommodate you. You
right.
know what I mean? That kind of thing. So it's really a public process that involves a lot of stakeholders in the community. And we've started that process. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of comments. I think they're planning on breaking ground next summer.
Outstanding.
You know, we're talking about the importance of local politics to individuals or to people in the construction industry to get them involved in it. What made you decide to get involved in politics?
You know, probably my parents. My dad was on the city council in Eagle, you know, a town of 200 people. I think they were just like, hey, you seem reasonably competent. Why don't you come be on the...
it's your turn.
He
yeah,
showed
exactly.
up to a
well,
meeting.
That's right. I mean, that's real public service. Working, being in on the city council and that kind of thing in rural Alaska, that's like true, you know.
Sure, yeah. So you're serving your community
exactly.
at that point. Yeah.
And so my dad did that. And then my mom, you know, she's always been really politically active. You know, she would go out door knocking and do that kind of thing. And she took me with her sometimes. And my first internship, I was 17. I went to intern for Frank Murkowski, for Lisa's dad. I went to D.C., ultimately went to college in D.C. as well, and, you know, just got involved. You know, I think about why I do that. I think it's, you know, again, it's partly just the my parents, but another big part of it is just, you know, I'm trying to get too political. I was in D.C. when the Iraq War started, you know, and I serve in the Army Guard now. And ultimately, that was a decision made by elected officials, you know, and whether you feel that the Iraq War was good or bad, you know, that was a choice that was made by people that we elected. We give a lot of power to our elected officials, you know what I mean? And that means that we have to be involved and hold them accountable, you know? And so long before I ran for office, I was working in politics, I was volunteering on campaigns, I was kind of, you know, I was just sort of in the mix, you know, because I felt these are questions that have real impact on people's lives, you know? And most questions aren't as, you know, heavy and large as whether or not we go to war in Iraq. But again, when you talk about local politics to that person, you know, that pathway, you think there's a pathway, you know, that's not getting plowed, right? And you think, oh, what's the big deal? Well, maybe their kid walks in that pathway to get to school. So for them, that's the most important thing in their life right now, you know, and they're not going to stop until you know about it, you know. And so politics matters because it impacts people's lives.
Well, and that's another kind of reason to be involved in it. You know, you find so many people that have very passionate opinions. They feel the government isn't doing what they should, or their local officials aren't say fixing the road the way they feel the money should be spent.
Sure.
But all they're doing is sort of complaining about it. But once you kind of start to get involved a little bit, you don't feel as helpless about what's happening around you. So you kind of you feel that you have more of a say in what you're involved in, which greatly reduces people's anger about the project, you know?
Yeah, I mean, usually, or it increases it if you get to know your politicians and they're terrible. but that's absolutely true. I served in the Peace Corps between college and when I went to grad school, and I served in a former Soviet country, you know, where they have a democracy, but it's kind of a sham democracy, you know, and everything is just from on high, and you just take the orders and you just live with it, you know? There's lots of places in the world where you don't get to have this. I think it's such a privilege and also responsibility that we participate in our democracy, you know.
A true civic duty. So just to send us out here on a high note, do you have any opinion on what the construction outlook for Anchorage and Alaska maybe in general is? What do you look out there and see from your perspective being...
Well, you know, I think probably a lot of your listeners have a better idea than I do about the specific projects that are out there and the specific health of the industry. What we have right now largely isn't an economic problem exactly, or a long-term problem with our investments or things like that. We have a political problem. We have a political problem that we can't figure out how to balance the state budget and figure out responsible ways to raise revenue so that we can have long-term budget stability. Because that provides municipal stability as well. You know, we have a balanced budget here in the municipality, but we feel the effects of what's happening at the state as well, and that is definitely trickling down to us, and that's trickling down to everybody. But if we can figure that political question out and we can reach some kind of stability, then the state has tremendous advantages, right? Our proximity to Asia, our incredible, you know, natural wealth, our tens of billions of dollars of savings. You know, in a lot of ways, we're in a much better position than most other states. We're just in a rocky place right now where we can't quite figure out, you know, how to get to that compromise where we have enough revenues coming in to have a sustainable budget. If we can do that, then I'm very optimistic. If we can't do that, then we're in a world of hurt, you know. And what we just did, what they just did in Juneau, spending down the CBR, that's the last time you can do that.
Right.
You know, that was the last time we can draw from that particular piggy bank.
Right.
So we have to figure out what comes next. And, you know, I hate to try, like, you know, pass the buck a little bit, but I'm at the municipal level, and we're looking to Juneau and asking them to help us with this. And I hope that people in the construction industry do the same thing and say, look, it's you have to come up with a real comprehensive fiscal solution. You know what I mean? You can't keep kicking the can down the road, because we're at the end of the road right now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
In terms of our the savings you
ability
can easily
to dip
draw
into
from.
Savings.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. And look, I'm not trying to get too political, but that's just the reality.
Right.
And look, I'm relatively young, and I want my children and my grandchildren to live here. And to do that, we have to have a sustainable state government that provides stability, so the municipalities like Anchorage can provide a quality of life with parks and trails and schools and drivable roads and you know, police and fire and everything else, so that young families want to move here and live here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we can get to that. I was hoping that we'd get to that this session.
Right.
It didn't happen. They're going to probably get called back into another special session, and then, you know, and then we're in election year. So we're in a tough spot right now, but I'm hoping that we can get there.
Can I ask you, you mentioned that you kind of your preferred way to be approached is or to be reached is through email.
Yeah.
If there are citizens who want to reach out to, say, their state politician about the budget or their local politician, like what are some of the best avenues for them to do that? And what are some of the worst? What are the ways
what are the worst?
Avoid, you know, dealing with your local representative?
What are the worst? Maybe posting in the ADN comment section is probably the worst. but the best is, you know, email and call. And, you know, there are, at the state level, they have staffers. And so you're probably going to hit a staffer first. Mm-hmm. But it's not like D.C. I mean, they do. I know that they listen, you know, particularly our best legislators in Juneau. They listen to their constituents. And that's another thing I'll say is, you know, you can email a bunch of different state legislators. And if you're the subject matter expert on something, they'll probably listen to you. But usually the most effective thing you can do is talk to your legislator. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Your district, your state senator, your state house representative. Talk to them and send an email to them, give them a call. And yeah, usually that works, actually. You know, you might not always get your way, and you might get a form letter back. And if that's the case and you think that your state senator or state house representative isn't listening to you at all, then run for office.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or recruit somebody to run if you don't want to, and donate to their campaign and volunteer on their campaign. You know, I mean, we have had plenty of examples of Alaska where you get politicians that become out of touch and aren't listening to their constituents and aren't responding, and then we run somebody good and we knock them out. You know, that happens all the time. That's the whole reason we have elections, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would recommend people do, you know, is call and send email and go to their community councils too.
Yeah, and a lot of the people that listen to this are, you know, they're union members, or they're, you know, we're funded in part from the Associate General Contractors or the Construction Industry Progress Fund. You can also reach out to your union and mm-hmm. say, look, this is a concern of mine. How are you dealing with it? Because I'll bet you each union has sent letters into the state legislature about this. I know that all these other organizations are involved in it. You know?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce is another good way. You know, we get a letter from the Chamber of Commerce or the AEDC or the general contractors. You know, if we get a letter, we tend to listen. You know, we'll read that letter. The other thing I'll just say, you know, pro tip is try to keep the messages like relatively short, because we get these like, you know, diatribes, and try to stay focused and try not to get like too personal. You know, I mean, it sounds obvious, but like, don't lead off with, "Oh, you idiots in Juneau, you know, can't get your head out of your butt," you know, all that kind of stuff.
That shouldn't be in the RE section.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
RE, liberal fascist, you know. don't lead with that, you know what I'm saying? Because that just turns people off to your argument. And your argument might be totally legitimate. There's this one person, I won't name names, but there's this one guy who often very passionately kind of attacks the assembly. And Bill Starr once told me, you know, just because this guy says it doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong. You know. Sure. But of course, he's not getting his way because the way he approaches things. You know what I mean? And you get that a lot. You know, and I get people who are really worked up and passionate. I mean, one tip is to write your email and then sleep on it and then come back the next day and be like, yeah, maybe I want to take out a couple of those F-bombs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I want to run it by somebody and see if I can be a little bit quicker, because, you know, ultimately, the people on the other end of the line are human beings. Doesn't matter what party they're in. They respond just like you would respond if you received, profanity laced,
an aggressive
conspiracy
sort of
theory,
yeah,
or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So that's my other tip.
Yeah, cool. And I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't weigh in at this point and say, a great starting spot for anybody listening that might be a union member is to attend their union meetings. So if you would like to know what your union is doing politically and why, then that would be a great place to start.
They can also listen to the Midnight Sun podcast.
Oh, baby.
I got to get my plug in.
Oh, I'm getting there. So if you have enjoyed this podcast, I will actually say something on a personal level. I listen to a lot of political podcasts just for fun. It's my thing. It's either
weirdo.
History or politics or football. It's one of those three podcasts for me in pretty much all times. The Midnight Sun podcast is a phenomenal podcast when it comes to Alaskan politics, and it's not just the subject matter, but the production value is really good. You
come
and
once a week, right?
Yep,
Casey Reynolds regularly on Sundays, and the insight that you guys offer, the guests you've had, I've heard representatives from both parties there. The governor was on, some legislative aides. You guys don't leave any stone unturned. But the point is, if you're interested in Alaska politics, the Midnight Sun podcast is the best one, maybe the only one out there specific to Alaska. But you guys do a phenomenal job. And
thank
I would
you.
Just
appreciate
say, if
it.
Anybody out there is interested in that subject, check out the Midnight Sun podcast for sure.
Yeah, it's nice because you can check into it and you're sort of just all caught up on what's going on politically for a week.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, you guys do a great job breaking down the budget, breaking down whatever's going on in the state. And you touch every once in a while on federal stuff, but you do pretty good at keeping it local. And
we try.
And I appreciate that.
You know, the situation federally kind of, like you said, it you know, draws a lot of eyes. It's impossible to avoid sometimes. But, yeah, we try to have local guests. And, yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on this one. This is great, too, though.
Yeah, appreciate you. Yeah. Have a great evening.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.